Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but you don't want to sit around on your butt all day. You're on the move, and you need your music. This station is linked with the Mobile Broadcast Network, which makes it possible for you to hear your favorite internet broadcasts live on your cell phone, anytime, anywhere. Get connected. Go to www.mymbn.com. The Mobile Broadcast Network is brought to you exclusively by Access Voice.
If you're one of the millions of Americans that suffers from acne or knows a friend or a loved one suffering, please turn up your radio and take down this life-changing information. Introducing Epiclear, the revolutionary new advanced skin treatment imported from Europe, formulated to help get rid of pimples and prevent further breakouts. Great for all ages and most skin irritations, Epiclear is doing something that no other acne treatment formula has ever done. Ever. We're so confident that Epiclear will clear up your skin that we're willing to let you try it for free. That's right, you heard free, and we mean free. Over a $70 value delivered without a prescription right to your house.
Call now while free supplies last at 1-800-656-5993. Nothing to risk and everything to gain. Call Epiclear at 1-800-656-5993. That was 1-800-656-5993. Limit one order per household, please. Call 1-800-656-5993. Shipping and handling not included.
We're talking with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only. Paul, I hear you're giving people the secrets to selling their timeshares, and now you're also giving them a free $500 shopping spree. Is that right?
That's right. A $500 shopping spree just for posting your property with Timeshares Only.
And that's in addition to learning the secrets and turning your timeshare into cash?
Learn the secrets. Get cash, plus get a $500 free shopping spree when you post your property.
So that's like a triple bonus. How can you lose?
You can't. There are over 10 million people out there looking to buy a timeshare, and nobody can connect them with your property better than Timeshares Only.
And you get a $500 shopping spree free.
And if you call now, we'll also tell you the secrets to selling your timeshare free.
That could all add up to big money. So call 1-800-921-0869. That's 1-800-921-0869.
If our consultants are busy, please keep calling.
Call now, 1-800-921-0869. That's 1-800-921-0869.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise. Another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everybody is having a great day, a great night, great afternoon, great morning. Tonight's guest is going to be Mary Rodwell. She's from Australia. Matter of fact, we will be time traveling to talk to her today. I just love this part of it, y'all. Come on, it's 10 o'clock Thursday morning there, 7 o'clock Wednesday night here. We got to travel forward in time so we can get to the woman and then come backwards in time to let all y'all hear it. So it's just interesting. It's kind of funny, and it's kind of interesting. Yeah, starting tonight, there will be live feeds for me, and we will be encouraging the guests, starting with next week's show, to also be doing live feeds. We'll also be talking to them about doing live video feeds and things like that, and presentations while the show is going on. Matter of fact, John Cools from Untold Mysteries, he's also an iCar member, we'll be getting together because we're going to be doing some video presentations on that in the near future. But one thing at a time, you know, it's just been very busy with everything lately, and everything's been kind of chaotic and crazy. You know, we went through a lull spot there for a little while, ladies and gentlemen, where it seemed that, it seemed that sightings slowed down. But as far as abductions, it didn't seem like they slowed down. It just seemed like it got quiet. In other words, most of the contactees weren't having any clear recall or recollection of what was happening to them. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on the way you want to look at this, that seems to be changing this week. Actually, it started at the latter part of last week and seems to be running into this one. But on that note, I'm going to be turning y'all over to Joyce in a minute. Joyce is our West Virginia State Director for ICAR. She'll be doing a news segment tonight. Joyce, can you hear me?
Sure can, Joe.
How you doing this evening?
Fine and dandy.
You ready? You're not a nervous wreck or nothing, are you?
Nah, a little nervous, not bad.
Well, take your time, and the floor is yours.
Great spasm, so I hope I don't cough. But I'm ready.
All right, well, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Okay, thanks. I have a few news items to share with you people tonight. One is about NASA, and you know President Bush wants to go back to the moon and on to Mars. So NASA is working on that, and it seems they're going back to the Apollo missions for their ways and means to do this. They have tight deadlines and uncertain budgets. They've actually gone back to some of the older engineers that worked on the Apollo project. And they're going to spend $125 billion over the next 15 years. They are, however, going to be sending a bigger and more powerful rocket and a larger capsule, and it will carry a maximum of 6 astronauts. So we're on our way to do this again. Hopefully everything will go well, and it will lead to a trip to Mars. And on the note about Mars, the Mars Society is calling for volunteers. They have a 4-month Mars mission simulation that they're going to do at the Mars Arctic Research Station. They're also going to do some part of it in the desert. And they're going to have a crew of 4 individuals, and they're going to just act as if they're on Mars. They'll be using space suits and practicing for being on another planet, which I think is pretty interesting. They're taking volunteers, so if you're interested, you might go to MarsSociety.org and send in an application. This ought to be interesting in the future if we can follow up on it. And also, the International Astronomical Union is going to have a General Assembly in Prague, and they have decided to reclassify planets. They have a proposal they're going to vote on, and they're going to rename. They're going to be planets and plutons. Now, I think this is kind of interesting. If this passes, we get to keep Pluton as a planet. But other planets or planet-like bodies similar to Pluto will be called plutons. They won't have full planet status. The ones they found recently would be in that classification. What was it, Ceres, and they still have Charon, and they have something called UB-313, hasn't been named yet, so we'll have to keep an eye on this and see if this resolution passes. That way, it seems that now that they have better telescopes and a better look at what's going on out in space, there are quite a few celestial bodies that could be classified as plutons. So this conference takes place between the 14th and the 25th of September, August. So pretty soon we'll find out if they're actually going to do this. And I'm for it because I hate to lose Pluto. Also, there's some interesting news that might be interesting to contactees. NASA's Spitzer, telescope has come to Orion, and they made some fascinating discoveries. They found some suns. They call them disks because they are gas and dust whirl around young suns. They're called disks. They have the potential to form planets and thus their own solar system. Now, this can tell us a lot about our own solar system and how they actually form. So, and they say that some of these, not all these planets, these suns are young. So, you know, the people, many contactees have been told that aliens, some of the aliens come from Orion. So this is interesting to any contactees that have had anything to do with aliens supposedly from Orion. They're scattered out a great deal. Some of the stars are clustered rather close together. Some of them are not as many in a cluster, and there are some that are rather far apart. But this can tell us a lot about the formation of solar systems and planets. They don't know why, but newborn stars, like the ones in Orion, tend to drift away from their siblings over time. But still, it may tell us a lot about the formation of solar systems. And I'll be keeping an eye on this to see if there's any further information about any solar systems there. So maybe the aliens that tell us they're from Orion are telling the truth. And on a note note that's interesting to me, since I am director of ICAR for West Virginia, I did a little study on UFO history in West Virginia, and I turned up some really, I thought, interesting things. There was a man called Gray Barker. He was born in Braxton County, but he lived most of his life in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And he was one of the original UFO investigators. And this was back in the wild and woolly days, and he was kind of a flim-flam artist. Along with the true reports that he made, he kind of tended to exaggerate a bit. He actually, this was back during the time when George Adamski was telling about his contact, and he actually made a tiny UFO model and dangled on a string in hopes of a movie in Lost Creek, West Virginia. He filmed this hamburger-sized model and claimed it was an actual UFO. This is bad because now we don't know what's the truth and what isn't of what he did. But West Virginia University is going to classify and sort through all his papers and books. Everything that he wrote was willed to the Harrison County Library, and there's a room there that has all of his work. And once it's classified, it will be interesting for researchers to go through and look at what he did. He published a magazine called The Saucerian, and he spent a lot of time on the Long John Neville show. Now, for those of you that don't know about Long John Neville, he was sort of the Art Bell of his day. He did a show much like the Art Bell show, Coast to Coast, and this Gray Barker was on there quite a bit. And he was on many shows, and he wrote quite a few books. He, believe it or not, is the person that invented the term Men in Black. He wrote a book called They Know Too Much About Flying Saucers, and that is where the term Men in Black originated. Now, later on, John Keel, who wrote The Mothman Prophecies, he invented the abbreviation MIB. So, Barker, Gray Barker, is the person that told the world about the Mothman sightings in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Of course, later on, John Keel took it and wrote the book, Mothman Prophecies, and then the movie came out of that. But Gray Barker was a person, he died young. He was only 59 years old when he died. And, you know, it's interesting about Gray Barker, but he's kind of an example of what we don't want anymore. I mean, we're wanting to get together and find out what the truth is about all this. But in the early days, there were many people that, you know, wanted to write things. And some UFO investigators today will take the truth and kind of add on to it to keep things going for themselves. I've noticed that. It's deplorable, but it does happen. The Gray Barker, he was truly a pioneer in the field. And we have the two big sightings in West Virginia that were nationwide news. I mentioned the Mothman sighting in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. It happened in November of 1966. And many of you may know quite a bit about this because you may have seen the movie or read the book, but there's now a museum in Point Pleasant about the Mothman. And they're actually having a festival this September 15th, 16th, and 17th. They're having a Mothman festival. They have a museum. They have a quite wonderful statue of the Mothman. It's 12 foot tall, and it's made of stainless steel, and the sculptor was Robert Roach. So they've got quite a bit going on in Point Pleasant about this Mothman sighting. Now, I can't resist saying a word about this because I live in West Virginia, and I was here in West Virginia when that happened. And I know the Silver Bridge collapsed. And there were a lot of fanciful, I think, ideas about that having something to do with the Mothman sightings. But I don't know. I think that prophecy thing is kind of a stretch in my mind. I remember it very well. It was December 15th, right before Christmas. And my cousin worked at a big chemical plant on the Ohio side of the river. He was in line to cross the Silver Bridge when it fell. So as a result, many people in West Virginia paid more attention to that than they did the Mothman. I think there was more about the Mothman outside of West Virginia. But many people have gone back and re-interviewed witnesses, and they swear they told the truth. So we don't know what the Mothman was. He's a 12-foot-tall I think he's about 6 foot tall, winged creature with red glowing eyes. Some skeptics try to say it was something like a barn owl, but we know that that's kind of silly, people. You can't tell the difference between a barn owl and a six-foot alien. Our other big deal is the Flatwoods Monster. Now, the Flatwoods Monster is Flatwoods, West Virginia. It happened on September 12th of 1952. They sighted an alien creature in the hills of Braxton County. And this looks different than the Mothman. It's kind of a little figure with a big eyes. Doesn't look like any picture of any alien I've ever seen. But this creature was sighted several times. And he's, the people around there swear it's true. And I know a few years ago they had a big conference there at Flatwoods, and they had some good-named people there at the conference. But that sort of died down there. I'd like to see that be revived. Hopefully it will be. So I hope you all found it interesting about West Virginia. I want to tell you, West Virginia only has a population of 1,808,000 people. There's a lot of there's national forests, state forests, and mostly rural areas, very small towns. There are no really large towns in West Virginia. So that's the kind of an area that it is. And back in the old days, there used to be lots of sightings, but in recent years, the skies are overcast in West Virginia at least 250 days a year. So sightings aren't easy to find. I have, just by informally asking around, found some people that just have told me, informally about things. I had a lady tell me about sighting a cigar-shaped ship. I had a lady tell me about a light. She, 40 years ago, she was 17, a bright light woke her up, and she could see the bright light outside her window, and she had a light being in her bedroom. She said it was a man-shaped light, vaguely man-shaped, a sort of a face in it. And I've had many people tell me about odd lights and swear it couldn't have been an airplane. So one of these days I'll have a page on ICAR for West Virginia, and maybe you'll be interested enough to find out a little bit more. That's all I have, Joe.
Oh, well, Joyce, I want to tell you thanks for coming on and doing the news for us tonight, guys. Give everybody tell Joyce thanks. You know, she's out there taking care of us, taking care of West Virginia, keeping us all rather halfway sane. Oh, guys, and if you get a chance to ever attend a conference with Joyce, please do, because you'll love it. She's a blast. Speaking of conferences, I hope everyone is going to be attending the Vegas conference this year, the Crash Retrieval Conference. I made my reservations today, so I will definitely be there. Picked up press passes for 4 of the ICAR members today. If you are an ICAR member and in good standing with the organization and you're thinking about attending it and you want to work press, and I mean, you want to work press, because we're going to have other members there, not everybody wants to be press. So give me a call, and we'll talk about it. We have 6 press passes allotted. 4 of them have already been assigned. Oh, 5. I apologize. I was just corrected. 5 of them have already been assigned. So there is 1 press pass open. The person you need to talk to with that about is Linda. You'd be wasting your time talking to me. I don't deal with that. She does that. I did have a nice long conversation with Ryan Wood. He will be on the show in a few weeks. He will be doing an hour and a half show with us, and he'll be doing an hour show with us come, actually about a half hour spot just before the conference. I do know several of the guests that will be attending the conference will be on to Wake Up USA prior to the conference. It should be very interesting. We'll be doing a lot of live coverage there. We'll be continuing our segment on the state of ufology today. Except for hopefully this time with Goss there, with David there, we'll get a little bit clearer audio than we had last time. The video wasn't bad. The audio was less than adequate to put up on an archive or a radio show or something like that. So I want everybody that can attend. I mean, Vegas is close to a lot of our members. I know we got a lot of members out in California. I know we got a lot of members in Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado. I mean, guys, get off your lazy butt, get in your car and drive down here. At least y'all can drive. I got to fly. Driving will take me 2 days to get there, and I am actually thinking about it too. I do like to fly, but lately, man, every time you get on an airplane, you hear about somebody trying to blow something up or sneak something on, or I'm not all that hip on flying these days. Spending a week in Vegas now, that could get me in real trouble, guys. But the conference should be good. There's going to be a lot of good guests there. There'll be a lot of ICAR members there. I do know, I think 10 that have made that'll be attending the conference. So look, come down. It's a good place to come and meet everybody and enjoy yourself and You'll get to meet a lot of the Wake Up USA staff. You'll get to meet a lot of the iCar staff, and you'll get to introduce a lot of the guests. So come on down. On that note, Jeff informed us that our guest is in the queue. So, Mary, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Joe.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mary Rodwell, I was kind of wondering, I know you're on the other side of the planet and on a whole different day than we are, so I'm always wondering how this stuff is going to work out when we do it. So how are you this, well, I should say for you this morning, huh?
Yes, it is. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here in Perth, Western Australia.
Well, that's about what time I get up and go to work. That's a tough one. Well, let me get you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself, you know, who you are, why you got involved with this, and then we'll start the interview from there.
Yes, certainly. I actually began about 12 years ago because a gentleman came to me with strange experiences that were affecting his whole family. And this experience was about being taken by unusual, strange beings up onto craft. He woke up with marks on his body, in fact, a shaved area on his leg that he couldn't explain. And he was really quite frightened for himself and his family. And he said, look, everybody thinks that you're crazy when you talk about this. He said, but there's nowhere to go. And he said, I've heard you're open-minded, and I would really appreciate some help and understanding. And luckily, I'd read some books on the whole topic, so I was aware it was a reality for many people. And one of the most important books was one written by Dr. John Mack, the Harvard professor who was the professor of psychiatry at Harvard, who had written a book called Abduction. So fortunately, I had some understanding. And basically, that started me off on this completely different journey.
I can imagine. I got all kind of questions for you to start off with, but we're going to kind of get slow, because I know we're already getting close to the first break. But, when you get into this research, first off, when you first got involved with this, I mean, what did you really think about this? I mean, was it something... Well, let me put it another way. When you first heard about this, did you just think all these people were loons, or... I'm just curious.
Actually, no, I didn't, because, you know, as a clinician, I mean, I've worked with people in psychological health the last 25 years, and you get a very good sense if somebody's coming from a credible, grounded place. And this gentleman was articulate. He was behaving all what I would call normal responses to everything that I was asking him. He was questioning his own reality. And I was very clear that this was somebody that was speaking his truth and coming from that place. I mean, he was a skeptical on lots of different levels as well as I was initially. But the bottom line was, you know, it wasn't just him that was having these experiences. So was his partner. So was his kids. So unless they're all having a mass hallucination, you've got to say something very real is happening.
Oh, I agree. Well, it's just strange because, you know, I always ask people that because I've been doing this myself for about 23 years. And as far as thinking there was life in the universe other than us or in our galaxy, that wasn't a hard thing for me to understand. I mean, we're here, so that pretty much proves there's other life out there. But, you know, when people started telling me about the abduction scenario, I was kind of like, okay, what have y'all been smoking, drinking, or popping? I'm kind of curious. After about a year of doing it, I was kind of like, well, because I had met some really credible people. And I was just, you know, if I couldn't understand why someone that would be credible would actually tell a lie or a fabrication or make up a story like this. You know, because a lot of these people that I meet over the years have a lot at stake. You know, they may have good careers, families, high positions in companies, and if it got out, it would cost them their career or their family. And so that was one of the turning points for me. But, how many of these different types of people do you think you've talked to over the years?
Well, you're absolutely right, Joe. I mean, I've spoken to lawyers, doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, all having experiences. And as one lawyer said to me, you know, if his clients, when he's earning $400 an hour, knew that he was having experience with extraterrestrials, he said, you know, I would have no practice. So this is really the problem. And I've now resourced over 1,200 people here in Australia and worldwide with these experiences, and they come from all walks of life, even as young as 18 months old, small children, you know, talking about going through walls and being taught on the craft.
Yeah, I don't know. All of this gets a little crazy sometimes. I was talking about this very subject with a friend of mine the other day, and he looks up at me like, you know, Joe, you've lost your mind. There's no such thing as aliens. They're not abducting people, so... we happen to have some mutual friends that I know are contactees, but he doesn't, so I was telling him about it. One happens to be a lawyer, too. And You know, that's kind of weird, too. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but I've noticed in the last few years quite a few lawyers coming into the ufology field as contactees and as well as just getting interested in it, which is strange. I'm not exactly sure what they're looking for, you know. It's just weird, but to see an influx of people from one particular field into the society seems to be strange. But so, I mean, for you, this is a real phenomenon. I mean, this isn't something that someone's making up or, you know, it's just a real phenomenon for you, right?
Look, Joe, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind. These are credible people, and we talked about, you know, lawyers, but I know doctors, I know, as I say, psychiatrists, all questioning and very skeptical. But the bottom line is that how can it not be real when it affects whole families? You know, whole families can't all be hallucinating. And when you, as I say, get small children talking about going on the craft and being taught on the craft, and these are, you know, kids of 3 and 4 years old drawing the beings that they say they see, I think the testimony from small children is particularly credible because they haven't seen talk shows. They haven't, you know, seen this on television. And what they're saying fits in with their parents' experience because, as I say, this is a family affair. So you've got parents also seeing these beings as well, and their kids are talking about the same thing. And often the kids talk about seeing mum and dad on the craft as well as themselves. And I've got a family in Canada that the two sons, one's 11 and one's 14, both saying they've seen mum and dad up there and actually describing what's happening.
And I'm glad you said that because everyone who's listening to the show knows that you're in Australia. And it was funny because on a radio show about 3 weeks ago, somebody asked me from Australia, they called in from Australia to the show and asked me, how come abductions never happen in Aussie land? And I said, what? I just had to start laughing, Mary, I really did. But I said, and where'd you get that false information from? So, ladies and gentlemen, see, and I know you're listening to the show tonight because you sent me an email this morning about it. See, look, I tell you, they happen all over the world. No, I agree with you, Mary. When a child's being brought on, you know, we try to explain this to contactees because we have support groups now that we actually we have online support groups for a lot of the I-Corps members and non-members. You don't have to be a member to visit the support group, but we do have them there for people. And by doing so, we get such an influx of people coming in and talking about the subject. Monday night, there was 140 people sitting there chatting about abductees, contactees, and I'd have to tell you about half of these people in this room at this night considered themselves to either be abductees or contactees. And when we got to talking about the child thing, you know, usually first memories for a contactee or an abductee, whatever you would like to call them, seem to be around between ages 3 and 5. And so what we started doing is we started talking to some of the moms to see how many times do they remember being abducted when they were pregnant so that we could actually say the abduction actually starts before birth, because it actually does. Now we know that. We didn't know that a few years ago, but we do understand that now. So we figure there's a periodically contact between the mom and the child up to about age 3, 4, or 5, and then it seems they start taking the children by themselves. I mean, it's not that they don't still take the parents, but it seems like they take the children. They're teaching them things. They'll be in groups sometimes. What amazes me the most about this, Mary, is most of these children that I've talked to don't really have a fear. Not like when you talk to an abductee or a contactee, say, in their 20s. These children don't have this fear, and it's because they weren't taught it. They just take it for what it is and go on. Now, I don't know if that's true for you or not. I'll let you go from there. Go ahead.
It's absolutely true that they don't have the fear. And I remember one lady telling me, her 5-year-old said, "Mom, I don't mind going through the walls, and they teach me more on the ships than I learn at school, and I'll introduce them to you one day." I mean, this is just a 5-year-old child and actually drawing the craft that he went on, which was a triangular craft. And he'd actually drawn an energy field, which he called an energy field, around it. Now, what kid knows of energy fields when, you know, they're 4 years old or 5 years old? I mean, this is when I believe, you know, you've got, you know, to me, this is very credible, tangible evidence that the children are experiencing something extraordinary, and they are not frightened. That's the amazing thing. They only seem to learn fear if their parents show the fear. Then it seems to make them wonder whether maybe they should be frightened too. But up to that point, most of them are not.
Well, and it's true, they're not. And we talk about this a lot, and I know we're getting closer to break, and I probably shouldn't get into this right before the break, so I guess we'll wait till we come back, ladies and gentlemen. So we're going to take a short break, everyone. I want you to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvin. I'm sitting and speaking with Mary Rodwell, and when we return, we'll pick up from where we left off, so please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
What America needs is affordable health insurance.
Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I've found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down, 877-679-7794. That's 877-679-7794. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds, those of us who run small businesses or don't get health insurance where we work, to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-679-7794. Not available in all states. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
What's happening? I'll tell you what. Kent Emmons here. How'd you like to spend a weekend in Branson for only $99? That's right. You and your family can now relax in Branson for only $99 or take the honey for a quick romantic getaway any weekend you choose. This amazing vacation offer includes 3 days, 2 nights in a great hotel, breakfast every morning of your stay, preferred show tickets, and hundreds of dollars in coupon savings all around town. You know, Branson, Missouri's got amusement parks, world-class golfing, beautiful lakes, endless shopping, and more live shows than Vegas. So give us a call now at 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99. It's our way of saying thanks for checking out our beautiful new resort, the Grand Crown. Here's that number again, 1-866-338-1410. Toll free, 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99.
We're talking with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only. Paul, I hear you're giving people the secrets to selling their timeshares, and now you're also giving them a free $500 shopping spree. Is that right?
That's right. A $500 shopping spree just for posting your property with Timeshares Only.
And that's in addition to learning the secrets and turning your timeshare into cash?
Learn the secrets, get cash, plus get a $500 free shopping spree when you post your property.
So that's like a triple bonus. How can you lose?
You can't. There are over 10 million people out there looking to buy a timeshare, and nobody can connect them with your property better than Timeshares Only.
And you get a $500 shopping spree free.
And if you call now, we'll also tell you the secrets to selling your timeshare free.
That could all add up to big money. So call 1-800-921-0869. That's 1-800-921-0869.
If our consultants are busy, please keep calling.
Call now, 1-800-921-0869. That's 1-800-921-0869.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the fact that he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
SRN 1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, Mary. You know, Mary and I were having a conversation actually at the break, so I'm going to kind of carry it into the room because we were talking about a couple of different things. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, Mary, how is it in Australia as far as how acceptable is this when you're discussing this in public? Because in the United States, it's still, it's a lot better than it was even 10 years ago, but still, it's not where it should be. So I was kind of curious, as a researcher for you, I mean, is it harder, easier? What do you think?
Well, having just done a 10-week overseas tour, I'm really delighted to say that in Australia, I think the media is a lot more open and accepting of this than it seems to be in other countries. In fact, you might be interested to know that I was actually rung up by a journalist a couple of years ago, who wanted to interview me for Australian Doctor Focus magazine. This is a magazine that goes to all the medical practices, and she wanted to know about my work for this particular magazine, and the headline for the magazine was Aliens, Why We Should Believe. Now, this is an Australian Doctor Focus magazine that goes to GP surgeries, and I actually had a GP contact me only a few weeks ago because he believed three of his patients may be experiencers. Now, where else in the world would you get, you know, a GP contacting you because he believes some of his clients may be having this experience? This is what I mean. I think Australia actually is probably one of the most open to this phenomena. Why that is, I can't tell you. But all I know is that perhaps some of it is really that we're perhaps just a society that's generally more open.
It might be. Well, maybe it's because y'all just broke away from England all those years ago and y'all felt a little more frisky and y'all don't want to be held down. I don't know. I mean, it's just strange because in the United States, well, we did the same thing and we seem to be much more uptight than y'all. You know what? I hate to say that, Mary, but the United States seems to be very uptight when it comes to this subject. And the reason I ask you that is because I've got a few friends down in Australia that do research, and when they're in the States, they're kind of like, man, it is just pathetic here, Joe. I mean, these people look at us like we're crazy. He said, I call the news media in Australia while Jim lives in Queensland. And he says, I call the news media. They actually take me serious, want to hear what I say. If I got some videotape, they'll put it on the news. I'm like, huh? So they don't do that in the States, man. I said, them people say, unless it's something crazy, they don't even want to talk to you. I mean, the last thing I know that got published in the States as far as a sighting went was the crazy guy, Prophet Yahweh. And the only reason they put him on there is because his name was Prophet Yahweh. So here it's a lot tougher, but I'm glad to hear that because that's got to make your job a little easier when it's more open and out there in the public. So, I mean, in Australia, you'd figure pretty much everybody or half everybody's familiar with this topic?
Oh, look, they did a Reader's Digest poll probably about 8 months ago now, and one in five reckon they'd seen a UFO or at least had some experience with it. That's one in five Australians, and they reckon at least 70% now of the population believes that we're being visited and by extraterrestrial intelligences. So, you know, that's a huge percentage. So, and some of that, to be honest, Joe, is because out in the country, many, many farmers and people out there have experiences. They see the craft. They, you know, they are experiencing this for themselves. And what you perhaps don't realize is we even have crop circles here in Australia. There's been at least 150 of them in the last sort of 15 or 20 years. So, you know, these strange experiences with, you know, with the Min Min lights and what have you mean that people have experienced these things. So maybe that's part of the reason they're so open.
It might be. You know, one of the things we track down there is the Aborigines because, you know, a lot of our research we've done in ancient history and with, like, the Aborigines, the Dogon, and so on, because a lot of their stories, when you sit down and talk to them about it, this is very acceptable to them, and they really think this is something real. And a lot of them even have something to say in how they may communicate or have had been communicating with them over the years. So I find that interesting. And that seems to be spilling over into a lot of the people I know down there. They seem to be doing... they seem to be using both the Aborigines and the local populations to kind of get a congeal, a kind of a more feeling about what's been going on in those particular areas since Australia's been there. And, you know, there's a lot of rumors on how long the Aborigines have actually been there, but they seem to accept this quite openly and quite easily and then usually have a wealth of information to tell you about it. What I found interesting about it is when we talked to a couple of people from a couple of the Aborigines and then talked to the Dogon, when we got to talking about the amphibians or the reptilians, whatever you would like to call them, they seem to give almost identical descriptions from two totally different sides of the planet. And I just find that interesting that you can find these in the ancient cultures. In the modern-day cultures, they seem to be much more uptight and not near as willing to discuss this in open forum. But for me, this is a real phenomenon. You know, I tell people all the time, people say, do you believe in aliens? I said, well, no, I don't believe in aliens. I know aliens are visiting the planet. I said, I've done my research and my homework, and I've seen enough evidence to prove to me that we're being visited. And I said, it's not a belief. It's not God we're talking about. It's extraterrestrials. And I do like to correct people on that because it just irritates me. You know, we're not believing in this. Either you've either seen something that made you understand this was real, or you've done the research that made you understand this was real, or you don't know. And if you don't know, it's not real until you know. So, I don't know. It's one of those things. That's why I was asking you about being in Australia, because I would love to work in a format that's kind of more relaxed and a little more open and a little more understanding about the subject matter. Unfortunately for me, I live in New Orleans, Louisiana, which is in the deep south of the United States and the Bible Belt. And it's not the most comfortable topic for people to be talking about on the radio or in public. It's just one of those things. But anyway, enough of that. Getting back to the abduction thing, have you done any generational cases? I mean, any cases where, you could track the family line of abductions?
Oh, absolutely, and it's a very important one, Joe, in the fact that it is intergenerational, that if you've got, an adult coming with the experiences, you'll be pretty certain that his siblings or her siblings, plus the parents, plus the grandparents, plus the children and grandchildren, and it actually goes through the generations, and you can actually track it. And this is what I say, it's not just one person coming to me, it's actually their whole family, ultimately, because many of them are aware that they're having this experience, even though they don't always understand exactly what it is. And the other interesting thing is, yes, it's all through the indigenous tribes, as you talk about, the indigenous peoples. Wherever you go in the world, they will talk about the sky beings, as the Wandjina calls them. The Aborigines call them the Wandjina, which is the sky beings that came down and taught them their laws. And they have no problem with the fact they're being visited. To them, it's part of their life and part of their reality. It's just the Western society that has dismissed any non-physical phenomena. And let's face it, if you can't touch, feel, and feel it, it's not real, which, of course, we know is absolutely a very limited way of looking at our reality.
It is a very limited way, but it's a very true statement. That's pretty much the Western world. And I don't know. I don't know where we lost touch with, what word am I looking for? I guess with our other sides, with the cosmic consciousness, the universal being. But somewhere along man's evolution, at least half of the population seems to have lost this. When we're dealing with contactees, that's why I was asking you about the generational thing, because, right now we're working about 5 cases of family lines, and I've been talking with Darryl Sims about 2 cases he's been working. And, well, this is where everybody in the family knows that they're being contacted and they understand. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of other cases we deal with where several members of the family are being abducted, but this is actually like one case. It's we have the grandmother, the mother, the daughter, the granddaughter, and the great-granddaughter. So we have, 5 generations right there, and we even have one that's 6, so we can sit there and talk and look and see how these cases may have progressed over the years, if anything were changed. We have noticed that psychic abilities, psychic abilities seem to increase per generation. Not a lot, okay, but they do seem to increase. Now, for me, I don't know if this is true for all researchers, but I have never met a contactee or an abductee that was not empathic. A lot of them seem to be telepathic, but I've never met one that's not empathic. I don't know if that's true for you. It just seems for us there seems to be almost always some type of psychic ability tied to a contactee. I mean, have you run into that?
Actually, Joe, it's a very important part of my research, is that this experience is real because of the changes that people experience through the having that contact. You don't get these kinds of amazing transformative changes from a hallucination. And they have become extremely psychic, clairvoyant, telepathic. A lot of the children exhibit telepathic abilities. They also seem to be able to perceive on a broader spectrum of reality. That's from seeing people's energies to actually having healing abilities. And we're actually discovering that small children know how to use these abilities. I was actually talking to a lady, a biologist in Vancouver when I was there, and she told me of a 3-year-old child that when the mother had burnt themselves badly and had this huge scald blister, she put her hand over her mother's, over the blister itself, and the blister disappeared. So these children have very real, tangible abilities, and they seem to also manifest some really unusual things as well as that, including coming out with strange languages, strange scripts, and geometric geometry drawings, artwork that is quite incredible, and it's extremely complex, which they call almost part of their downloading of information or knowledge bombs, one little eight-year-old called them, where they're taught things or given things through a kind of telepathic communication.
It is strange. You know, I do notice as far as contactees, abductees, what contactees will say, they seem to have, most mothers seem to have some type of tie to the baby when it's in a womb, but not like these do. These seem, it's almost like they're dictating moods. It's hard to explain, but I've watched mothers, contactee mothers, that will be sitting there and all of a sudden they'll get up and say, oh no, the baby needs this, the baby needs that, and they'll deal with it, and I'm like, okay, was it out of feeling? And when they try to explain it to me, they say it's more like a thought, or almost like they could pick up the baby's thought. And I was like, well, it's a contactee baby. It's probably transmitting. But we have noticed that each generation's abilities, especially in the last 4 or 5 decades, seem to be getting quite a bit stronger. Quite a few of these, well, one of the things we teach, I mean, over the years we've learned that if we can get a contactee to come to grips with what they are, if they're truly an abductee or a contactee, if we can get them to come to grips with what they are, understand it and deal with it, most of them seem to be able to access these abilities and use them in everyday life, and it seems to help their lives immensely. I cannot tell you how many contactees I've run over to over the years with either alcohol or drug addiction problems that are now are excellent members of society and contributing in ways far more than they even thought they would ever be able to do. And that amazes me. Now, I don't know if you've run into this, but we have over the years run into at least, I mean, we've done over 7,000 cases in the last 20 years, actually in the last 24 years, and I've got to tell you, at least half the ones we've come across had some type of addiction. And, I mean, I can understand why. It's just a hard thing to deal with. I mean, have you run into that?
I believe that, you know, when you are born more aware and more psychic, I think the whole reality and the way this earth works is very difficult to deal with, especially if your abilities are denied. And so I think a lot of the, you know, when they're younger, when they're adolescent, it's very hard to be different. So I think many of them do turn to drugs or alcohol as a way of surviving and shutting down a lot of these abilities, which later on, I think, you know, they start to work with and open up again. I always remember this, what I call 30-year-old, I call Star Kid, who said that, you know, things like, you know, one of his sisters said to him once, I would have telepathic conversations with my sister until she told me to stop being lazy and start talking. This was just one of the abilities he had actually with his sister. Now, if you are multidimensionally aware, as many of these kids are, and some of them apparently don't even see solid when they're a child. They see everything as energy. So they have to learn what solid is. So it must be very hard when they're in a reality where a lot of their awareness is denied and they're trying to fit into a very limited third-dimensional box. But I do think that what happens is ultimately they start to deal with it, and they may need to be a little bit past adolescence to be able to do with that or to deal with it in a better way, or at least they seem to get the skills. But many of them do struggle with addictions as well, I think, because they find it very hard being on this planet and because of their awareness.
Well, they do, and a lot of the people I talk to seem to, I don't know, at least now, though, I notice since we've added the support groups, they seem to, I guess, become addicted to the groups, and at least they give up the alcohol and the drugs, and they seem to start working in a positive direction, which is nice to see. And by the way, I'm just happy. I mean, 2 weeks in a row now, I've actually got to talk to abduction researchers working in the same area as I am, which is unusual. I think this is like show 115 for me, and I usually, I mean, everything we talk about on the show is related to this subject matter, but it's rare that I run across someone who's actually been doing their homework. Usually I get, we're not even going to get into that, but usually I get things that I'm like, what did you just say? Have you done any research? Please don't say dumb things like that anymore. But it's just nice. It's nice to see people because, you know, when I got involved with this, when we started talking about this in the community actively about 10 years ago, all the ufologists were looking at us like we were crazy. And over the last couple of years, I've noticed that there are 3 or 4 of us out there that are working along the same lines in the same areas and have basically the same understanding of what's going on with contactees and abductees. and we've all done it independently, which means the data is probably much more correct than most of the data you see in this field, which is nice. It's just a really nice thing. I mean, it's like I said, it's a rare thing that I run into. But, Matt, are you ready for some questions? Because I see them putting their hands up in the virtual auditorium, and they'll start getting nasty here in a minute if I don't let them ask some questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because we have the virtual auditorium, and then we have the toll-free numbers. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to use a toll-free number, you know, feel free, pick it up, give us a call, you know, anytime you want. On that note, we're going to start taking some questions. So, D-Dragon, I see you got your hand up, and you've been patiently waiting. Why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on air with Mary.
Thank you, Joe. Ms. Rodwell, I was wondering if by chance, you had ever had an opportunity to work with Bill Chalker and what your opinion of his work is. I've read a little about him, and I'm pretty interested and been kind of following him. Just your opinion, if you wouldn't mind. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mary.
Bill Chalker, yes, I've met Bill several times at conferences, and he's very interested in showing the tangible reality through, you know, the Alien Hair book that he's written recently, which was Peter Khoury, who I also know, who's an experiencer. I think the great thing with Bill is he's a scientist, and through that he's shown to show the tangible differences in this alien hair that was left on Peter Khoury when he had an experience, to show the that it was in fact something that had a very strange anomalies. And we live in a third dimensional paradigm which says we have to prove this on as many levels as possible. And the great thing with Bill is that he comes from that understanding. He's looking at the science that will qualify the experience, which I think is extremely important. So yes, I think he's very credible. I think he's very dedicated, and certainly doing a great job in proving more of this reality to the general public in terms of its tangibility.
Okay. There you go. I hope that answered your question, Dee. I hope that was good. I see what we've got up there. TRNT-137, I see you have your hand up, and I know you've been patiently waiting, so why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live on air with Mary Rodwell.
She's from Massachusetts. Good evening. Wonderful program. Thank you, Ms. Rodwell, for this information on tonight's program, as well as for a most eloquent and dynamic presentation at the Hawaii Extrapolitical Conference this past June. My question tonight, Ms. Rodwell, have any linguists wished to analyze those audio tapes of contactees speaking alien languages, since those audio segments you presented at the Hawaii conference seem so authentic, given the complexity, uniqueness, and rapidity of the vocal patterns heard in those tapes? Certainly, I can imagine that many linguists would want to analyze them. Thanks for your responses.
Interesting. Go ahead, Mary.
It actually is fascinating to me, and the reason that I put together two documentaries, which were Expressions of ET Contact, a visual blueprint, which was about a lot of the artwork that those with experiences are doing, apart from drawing the beings that they see. The second one, Expressions, was about communication and healing. What I discovered is that some of the languages are recognized by other people in other parts of the world. In other words, they'll say that I knew that one, or I understood it on some level. The interesting thing is, though, that what those speaking the languages tell me is that it can't be understood necessarily. Not all of them can be understood in the way that we understand language. It's almost like it's holographic kind of language. It's a language that's understood on another, by another aspect of ourselves, or an energetic part of ourselves. Many of them seem to believe it's from their origins, that it's a kind of universal language, or a soul language, a language from maybe where some of our genetic origins are, or our soul origins are from. So it's not something that you can necessarily translate, although talking back to the media again, Joe, in the fact that when I did the Hidden Truths conference here about 2 years ago, the media actually interviewed a young lady who came out with one of these languages, and she called herself a star kid. And they said, well, can you speak a language? And she did actually on the 6 o'clock news speak this language. I've had people come to me and say they understood it and they actually understood what was being said. So it seems like some experiences can translate some of it, but perhaps in a limited way, because not all of it is understood in the way that we understand language. So it's a bit of a challenge for us at the moment to do it to actually translate it in the way that we normally would do.
That makes total sense to me. I mean, most of the contactees I talk to, when they tell me about the types of communications or the most types of communications they have with extraterrestrials, and it really doesn't seem to matter if it's the greys, the humans, or the amphibian reptilians, usually it's a telepathic communication based on an image program, which is kind of dangerous because, you know, we all interpret things differently. It's half a cup of water, a full cup of water, no, you know, or is it just the cup, the saucer, what? But, you know, so, but that's usually how they communicate. So I would imagine in any spoken language, at least in the way they would speak, there would have to be some visual representation to the verbal language itself. Each word probably actually visually refers to something. So if you were trained that way, or if that's the way you were taught the thought from a child as a contactee, then yes, you probably do recognize it and understand what's being said when you hear it. Because when you're not actually listening to it. I mean, you're listening to it, but it's actually forming more of images in your head. In other words, the sounds or cells are forming images in your head, so you're understanding what it is you're hearing. I've had quite a few contactees tell me that is a gift for the what they like to call the core groups, which are the smaller groups of contactees. There seems to be groups that lump together for some reason or another. It's one of the things we've been working on for the last 5 years, why they group together and what may or may not have to do with alien agendas. It's one of the things I try to tell people all the time. E.T., you know, people always assume E.T. is here to help us, hurt us, or whatever. People don't realize that these are extraterrestrials and they have an agenda. And we are part of that agenda. We are not the agenda. We are part of the agenda. And that's an important thing to understand, to really understand where this may or may not lead to down the line. But, you know, it's just one of those strange things we run into. And I, like I said, I really enjoy doing this. I meet some of the most interesting people, both in the field and just contactees and abductees. You know, there's something unique about all contactees and abductees. There always seems to be something unique about their personalities. I haven't, knock on wood, met one I haven't liked yet, so that's interesting in itself. And I can't say that about everybody, because I meet a lot of people every day, and some of them I'd like to drop off a bridge somewhere. I don't know, it's kind of strange. But, you know, going back to these different abilities, let me ask you this. Now, you know, we talk with the empaths, the ones that have, you know, they can sense feelings or broadcast feelings. One of the things we have to make them understand is sometimes, especially when they're young, a lot of the feelings they're feeling may actually not be theirs. They may be sensing someone else's, because I've had contactees ask me, well, how come I'll be sitting on the edge of my bed and all of a sudden I get sad? I said, well, did somebody walk in the room? Do you know someone that was having a problem that day? And they're like, well, yeah, such and such had this happen to them. I said, well, you were just feeling their emotions because you're close to them and, you know, you just experienced it as it was yours. I said, but it wasn't actually yours. So that's one of the things you got to teach them. And a lot of contactees, and I don't know if this is true for you or not, when they meet each other, either know each other or they communicate. If you're actually listening to the conversation, you're missing half of what's going on, because they leave out words because the other person already knows what they're saying before they finish the conversation. But I don't know if that's true for you or not, Mary. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really quite fascinating. One of the star kids, as I call them, actually said to me, the information that they get, like one word to us, like Christmas, brings up a myriad of images. It's almost the same way with some of the information they get. It's like holographic information in a download. And she said just one actual hieroglyph, for example, could fill a room with encyclopedias in terms of the information contained within it holographically. I think that's really quite fascinating. But when you're talking about their empathy or the way that they tune into others, they certainly can seem to read emotions, read feelings, and many of them, you know, can, you know, manipulate energy in different ways, and that's why some of them go into healing and this kind of thing. And we're seeing them, as you know, Joe, all around the world, these children that are manifesting these abilities. In China, they're called China Super Psychics. And they, you know, they've been able to actually change the very, very DNA in a Petri dish with thought. And this is where I believe, you know, we're going. We're actually evolving as a species. And I think these children, each time through each generation, are being upgraded to become more multidimensionally aware. They've got about 1,000 children now in Mexico that can read with different parts of their body or see with various parts of their body. It's like we're being upgraded into a species that literally can perceive on a myriad of multidimensional levels.
Well, anyway, I'm going to hold you right there because we got to take a break because I got like 50 comments to make after that, but we're going to go take a break, ladies and gentlemen. So I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalva, and we're sitting and speaking with Mary Rodwell, and we'll be taking questions as soon as we return, so please stay tuned.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
This is Dan Hall from No More Waiting, the folks that get structured settlement holders their money now. So right now, call us at 800-768-6286. Got an insurance settlement that's taking years to pay out, but you want your money now? No More Waiting is for you. You're in the third year of a 20-year settlement, but you want a new car or a new home now? No More Waiting is for you. Need to catch up on bills now? No More Waiting is for you. Call 800-768-6286. Want answers about your settlement payments now? No More Waiting is for you. In fact, No More Waiting has prepared a DVD chock full of information to help you get the most money for your settlement payments. Call today. It's free and there's no obligation. Call 800-768-6286. That's right, for your free DVD. Just call 800-768-6286 for your free quote, your free DVD, and your path to financial freedom. Call No More Waiting at 800-768-6286 now.
Quicken Loans knows when your mortgage payment is too big, it follows you everywhere.
Hey, guys, where are we going?
Hi, Big Mortgage.
Dad and I are going car shopping.
Not without me.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
A mortgage payment that's too big can drive every financial decision you make.
Scooch over, little man. The Big Mortgage is your dad's constant companion.
Dad, the Big Mortgage is squishing me.
I'd really like to get a bigger car.
The Big Moo says no.
Don't let your big mortgage payment push you around. Pick up the phone and let Quicken Loans show you how to lower your payment up to 33%. That's a third off your payment. Call 800-928-5199. Quicken Loans makes it fast and easy to say goodbye to your big mortgage payment.
You're not the boss of us.
R2.
R9.
R2. R9.
Am I going to have to separate you two?
Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199 today. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199.
We're here today with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only. And, Paul, you've got some terrific news for timeshare owners.
That's right. In the next 6 months, over $3.5 billion of timeshares will be sold.
So this is the perfect time to sell.
Exactly, which is why you need to get your property into our network. And if you call us right now, you'll also get a $500 shopping spree absolutely free.
$500 free?
Yes. Just for posting your property with Timeshares Only. And when you do sell your property, you'll get cash. It's a double bonus. You can't lose.
Except if I don't call.
Hey, over 10 million people will be looking to buy a timeshare. So we need your property now.
The number to call now is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866. Turn your timeshare into cash and get a free $500 shopping spree.
And if our lines are busy, please keep calling.
That number again for timeshares only is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mbr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all know I'm your host, Joe Montalvo, and we're sitting and speaking with Mary Rodwell. Remember, if you'd like to use the toll-free number, you can reach us at 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. The lines are open, and there's always a virtual auditorium on Pal Talk. You can come join us there as well. You know, I'm sorry, guys. I get at the break with Mary. We actually are talking about things at the break that y'all should be hearing. It's just one of those things, you know. I'm sorry. We got the guest in the queue, so it gives me an advantage to talk to him. But, you know, when I listen to you talk, I mean, like I heard you were calling them star kids. I mean, we've been calling them star children for years and years. But for us, really, when we say star child, we mean any child of a contact or an abductee. You know, that's what we consider star children because That's the well, they are. I mean, they're children of contactees, so they're star children. And then their kids will be the same. And I don't know if that's true for you, because, I mean, different people label them different ways, and then there's always what people like to call the indigo children and the star seeds, which I just try to stay away from those subjects whenever possible. Because when they start telling me they're half human and half extraterrestrial, the first thing that's out of my mouth is, can I DNA test you? I said, I'll tell you what. I said, we'll have your DNA tested. You pay for it. If you're truly have alien DNA, we'll pay for everything. Don't even worry about it. You know, and you know what's funny is Daryl Sims brought that up a couple of weeks ago, and somebody else did as well. So far, no one to date has taken any of us up on this offer, period. They'll tell us that, but as soon as you say about having them tested, it goes to a whole another level. I don't know. I mean, have you ever run across, I mean, I'm sure you have run across people that say they're human and alien, but how many of them, let me ask you, I'm going to phrase this another way. How many of them do you think are honestly telling you the truth?
Well, it's an interesting one because I always talk about the fact that we have been genetically engineered right from the word go by various different kinds of beings that have visited Earth. I firmly believe that, and that's what all the indigenous tribes talk about, from the Dogon tribe that talks about the Nummo that came down and interbred with them and genetically engineered them. We do know that we have 223 genomes within our DNA that cannot be explained. There are sideways insertions in our genetic material that did not come up the invertebrate phase of our evolution. And scientists can't explain this particular input, and it's all to do with higher psychological functioning, that is two-thirds the difference between us and the chimpanzee. So I think the evidence that there's been intelligent design or intelligent interaction with our genetic material, I think, is in no doubt. But whether, you know, we can actually look at the constant upgrading that many experiencers feel and gives them that feeling of being part extraterrestrial, which is certainly a deep sense of knowing. I do actually know a very, very intelligent lady that's doing her PhD in education that said her white cells had anomalies that a particular biologist friend looked at and really got quite freaked out by. And at some point, she wants to actually have her DNA looked at because she feels there is something that will give a clue to this. So I don't think we should fully dismiss it, and I think that we have to be aware that perhaps there are ways of working out whether or not, you know, there is a continuous changing in terms of our DNA through these extraterrestrial contacts. So I don't completely dismiss it, but I do think that already we've had evidence of that through our evolutionary cycle and the missing link, if you like, from Neanderthal, Cro-Magnon up to Homo sapiens sapiens.
But, you know, I agree with that because you can't rule out them all. It's just for me, I notice, and I don't know if this is true for you or not, but it just seems like about 95% of the time when someone approaches me with that particular line, they usually turn out to be, how can I say this politely, a nutcase. They just do, and I don't know why. Maybe it's just a luck of the draw for me personally. I really don't, but it does seem to be that way. I'm not saying that about contactees and abductees because, you know, we have a lot of professionals inside the groups that we work with, so I wouldn't dog on them. Besides that, I would get smacked around because several of my close family and friends are contactees. So, but in this case where they're saying they're part alien, it just bothers me because this is what I figure. When we go back to Sumerian text and we talk about the seven creations of man and they created the humans, not us humans, but humans, the ones that were the slave race, because they mention it and the Christian Bible mentioned it and several other places mentioned that they were pretty much dumb. They could do things like name the animals, plow the fields, make beer, procreate, but they really didn't understand, you know, anything about themselves, the universe. They didn't even know how to ask why. When they talk about Nemos or the amphibian reptilians, they say that they interbred with humans, and that's what gave us self-awareness. And that's when we became self-aware. The Bible mentions it as well when the serpent hands Eve the apple. It's mentioned in pretty much every ancient culture. That's what I find interesting. You find these legends, stories, whatever you'd like to call them, in pretty much every ancient culture. And that seems to be how man was originally created on the planet. It also seems since then that the graves have felt some need to intervene and put their DNA in. So I really wouldn't think, and at least these three races, I don't think their DNA would show up much different than ours would. Being that we're probably partially based on all of them, I don't think that DNA would be that different. I think it would take a lot more technology than we have today to decipher between the three. I don't think it's going to be something that, you know, obviously is all that different. Or the races wouldn't be compatible for genetic engineering and breeding. We have to have similar DNA if we can mate, so. Or it has to have been manipulated on both sides enough that we can mate. So either way it goes, their DNA has to be similar to ours. So I don't think when people say that now, you know, if they told me they were visited by some race that we've never heard of and was totally different looking, maybe then you might actually find something different. It's just strange because we've been looking for hybrids, if you know, to find a true hybrid. And so far, we just haven't had a chance to do that. So, you know, I'm hoping, you know, we run across a real one. I mean, I would really personally like to. Of course, that would be about the same as getting an actual alien on the radio show. have there been any on-ground sightings of aliens in Australia?
Oh, certainly. There are quite a few cases where people have said they've had contacts with the beings. One of the most interesting was from a 76-year-old lady that I met last year at Adelaide. She was, had a farm. She was 21. This was in 1952. And she'd not spoken about it ever until she came to this particular conference, which was 50 years later. And she said this strange structure was on her land. She didn't know what it was. She thought that the council had put a strange structure on her land without telling her. And the next thing she knows, she's taken up into the class itself, and she sees these tall humanoids with blonde hair and blue eyes, and all these strange monitors and what have you, and they tell her it's a spacecraft. I mean, she's 21 years old, an Aussie girl, you know, only 20, as I say, in the 1952 this is. She had no idea what a spacecraft even was. And they continued to tell her where they were here and gave her information to do with an enormous number of things on the planet, and has continued to do so for the last 50 years. And I said, well, why didn't you ever, you know, speak about it, Dawn? You know, why didn't you tell anyone? And she said, who would believe me, Mary? She said, you know, people don't believe things like this, so what was the point? And yet she'd been given profound information, even to how the pyramids were built. And interestingly, she was talking about the same things a five-year-old was saying about the pyramids. In fact, that, you know, the blocks of stone were levitated into place. And she said the identical thing to a five-year-old that had told his mother the same thing, and that a giant crystal was placed on the top to communicate with other worlds. And she said exactly the same thing to me. So what's interesting is not only the stories being corroborated by, you know, the children and as well as adults, but, you know, it literally is the most mind-blowing kind of information. When you get a five-year-old saying, and they change the density structure of objects, large or small, and levitate them into place, when it's a five-year-old telling you this, you've got to say, where on earth did he get this kind of information? And he'll tell you on the craft.
Yeah, and you're right, he will tell you. Yeah, that amazes me about some of these kids. What amazes me, too, about some of these kids is they seem to have, I don't want to call it clairvoyance, let's just say they seem to have a heightened sense of awareness, but I've heard some of these kids talk, and they'll say stuff like upcoming events. They'll just say something, and all of a sudden you'll be sitting there watching TV or something one day, and you'll say, well, when did I hear that before? And then you'll realize it. You heard it from this 5 or 6-year-old, and you're like, oh, dang, no way. And but I think a lot of that is, Mary, is because as a child, you haven't been taught that any of this is silly or that psychic abilities aren't real, so you're accepting it for what it is. You know, as you approach adolescence, I shouldn't say adolescence, as you approach puberty into your early teen years and going into adulthood, you know, the world makes you conform, or at least tries to make you conform. And in doing so, you seem to lose a lot of that, a lot of touch with everything else. It doesn't seem to come back for several years for most people. And I find that interesting. I mean, I guess it's the need to conform and be part of society. But, you know, even in today's society, as much as psychic abilities are talked about and even used in militaries, it still isn't sociably acceptable, which still doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, most people have to realize that this has got to be part of a natural evolution on this planet, even without alien intervention. Sooner or later, we were going to develop into a psychic race. I mean, it just seems to be plausible in the way we should be headed. But even in today's society, and on a worldwide basis, some people seem to be very open to this, but the majority seem to be like, oh, no. Unless you can, like, read their mind and tell them what's going on in their life, they don't even want to talk to you about it. Have you run into that?
I think it's really interesting how clairvoyance and clairaudience and this kind of thing, now the psychic field, people are a lot more readily able to accept that nowadays than they ever did, even 5 or 10 years ago, you know, hence the programs you get on the television to do with mediums, you know, this kind of thing. But it's when you get to aliens and UFOs, for some reason, even the most spiritually aware seem to shut right down. They can't seem to handle that aspect of it, and yet it's all one. It's all part of the same thing. It's all part of us becoming multidimensionally aware and perceiving other frequencies, which is really all it is. It's, you know, I talk about the dog that can hear sounds we can't. It's awareness. They can just see a broader spectrum of reality or a broader spectrum of frequencies. But, you know, it's still very hard when you get those even open to that, that they can't take bald-headed guys with black eyes.
Oh, I don't know. It's true, but it's strange. And people are just, I don't know. I guess I would just think the society should be more open-minded than one is. I don't want them to be airheads, but, you know, I'd like them to see them be a more open-minded. I mean, it's one of the things we talk about, you know, we all refer to ourselves, whatever country we may hail from. But, you know, and I say this a lot on the radio, and I do catch a lot of flack for this, but I've told everyone you should refer to yourself as a Terran or an Earthling or whatever prior to whatever your nationality is. Because bottom line is, and this is the truth of the matter, we're all on the same little ball flying around in space with that little thin veil of atmosphere separating us from the space. This is our planet. It's not my planet or your planet or anybody else's planet. It's our planet. And I really think as a species, and I say that as a species, if we don't learn this lesson, we're going to be in deep, deep, deep dog poo. I'm sorry to say, but we're going to be. And you would think that would be something that would be natural. And the reason I'm talking about this, Mary, is because a lot of the contactees, and it doesn't seem to matter where they're from or where they're located, they seem to have a natural pull to each other. They don't fight against each other. They're usually not mean to each other. They usually are very sensitive and understanding to other contactees and abductees and whatever it may be. But I did notice in the last few years, a lot of the contactees seem to disassociate themselves with the rest of the race. And when I say that, I mean that they're still active members of society and they're still going to soccer games and football games and having friends, but it's almost like emotionally they are distancing themselves from the rest of the species on the planet. And that actually kind of makes me a little bit on the nervous. I don't know if you've ever run into that or not, but I'll give you a chance to tell me. Go ahead there.
Absolutely. It's not that they're trying to disassociate. I think they find what happens on this planet, as they tell me, is that they can't understand man's barbaric attitude to wanting to kill each other. Because usually they're very environmentally and ecologically aware. They don't want to kill anything, even if it's a small fly or an insect. They'll be very, very anti any kind of aggression. And what they're saying is that, you know, it doesn't make sense to treat each other the way that we do, and that they seem to know or be aware there's a better way to do things. So it's not as though they're, you know, that they're disassociating or trying to be different in that sense, only that they can't understand the way some humans behave, as they call it. You know, it doesn't make sense because you're harming each other. Why would you do that? And as you say, we're all, you know, beings on this planet. We're all, you know, trying to live here and you know, have meaningful lives. And it's more about that. They seem to be just take themselves out of what I call some of the very aggressive, unpleasant behavior of some human beings and the way that they want to kill each other rather than resolve issues or matters like this. Interestingly, just to add to that, a lot of...
Okay, that was weird.
And I've got a quote from a gentleman that when he was 4 years old, he shocked his parents by saying, "Something of incredible importance will happen on this planet and will affect all levels of consciousness. It will not happen in your lifetime, but will in mine." And he said, "My poor mother never forgot that conversation." And he was four at the time. He's now in his 50s. And, you know, interestingly, they all seem to be aware there needs to be a change in... and that it seems to be happening or will be happening very soon.
That's weird. I'm sorry. When you were talking, I was getting... we must be some little lag between us somewhere in the satellite system or something. That was strange. It was like you were talking, and then I'd hear silence for a second, and you'd start talking again. That was weird. I'm assuming it's because there's such distance between where you're at and I'm at, but that's still strange. You know, yeah, I was listening to what you were saying. I guess, yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to make heads or tails of this when you're not a contactee. As a contactee, seeing it from the inside out, it's got to even be harder because, you know, some of them, I guess when they're looking at other people or they know part of the agenda or what may or may not be coming in the near future, and I think that's one of the reasons, too, that most contactees and abductees are environmentally friendly, is because they have an idea of up-and-coming events. So I think that by knowing that, it does make them, I don't know, but they do seem to emotionally kind of separate themselves from the rest of the species. And that just bothers me because, you know, I've heard contactees talk about friends and family and other contactees, and a loss, they would be devastated. But when I hear them start talking about non-contactees, they seem to be very nonchalant. Like, well, you know, they should have been doing this or they should have been doing that. But I can tell you this, it doesn't seem like any of them are going to lose any sleep over it. And I don't know if that's programming or if that's just the way they feel. And it's just strange. And I've been seeing more and more of this in the last few years. And I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe it has something to do with world affairs. You know, we don't live in the most stable place anymore. But it does seem to be that a lot of them seem to be separating themselves emotionally from the rest of society. Like they're almost expecting something to happen, and they're preparing themselves. It's just like when you know a sick parent or a loved one's going to die, but it's going to take, you know, 8 or 9 months. You're going to prepare yourself ahead of time as much as you can. And that's what it seems like they're doing. And like I said, I don't know if you've run into this or not. It's just something we've ran into in the last few years. And yeah, I have to say, though, it does bother me because it makes me wonder what it is these people think that are coming. But I'll let you make a comment on that.
I understand what you're saying, and yes, I do come across it, Joe. And the interesting thing is, though, I think the reason they seem detached is because they find it very hard to continually listen to the negativity and the fear on the planet and the, you know, what's actually happening now. Even my own son, who's 24, says, you know, Mum, I don't want to watch the news anymore because it's just so horrible. Everything that I hear is about killing, about fear, and about what's wrong with the planet. So I think in a way it's a way of protecting themselves from the pain that they can tune into because they're so sensitive, that the only way to survive it or to not get drawn into it is to actually detach. And I think it's more that than anything else. but also some do seem to have a sense there's going to be some kind of shift on the planet or some kind of shift of consciousness or different way of actually living, and that we're very close to that right now, whether or not it's in the next half a dozen years or the next 10 or 20 or 30, who knows. But they do seem to sense there needs to be change, and maybe on some level they're aware of that change.
Yeah, I'm sure they have to be aware on some level, because a lot of them seem to be preparing themselves for something. You know, something else we've been running into, I mean, we've always had them talk about, like, star councils and stuff like that and other weird things that you really couldn't prove either way, but a lot of them talk about this planet. I've seen a lot of images of it. I've seen a lot of images of the Council of 13, and I've seen a lot of images of this planet that seems to be, I guess, for us, for a lack of a better way of explaining, that's what it seems to be. Plus, we have a group of contactees, about a full one-third of them now, that have what we like to call the Holocaust dream. This one-third of these contactees, and it's like you were saying earlier, for us, when we get someone from, like, Australia or from Russia even, and we get some from the United States telling us the same thing, and we don't publish what we consider abduction criteria or agenda criteria. That stays inside the organization. And when we start hearing the same reports from all over the world and people telling us the same thing, we're kind of sitting there going, okay, what happened? What changed? What was the change? And why is this going? It's like lately a lot of the contactees we've been talking to have a sense of urgency. Now, that may or may not do with their contact because, you know, what's going on in the world right now, and Israel blowing up the Middle East and America helping them out real well. You know, that might be enough to trigger this in a lot of normal people, but we're not really seeing it in everybody. We're just kind of seeing it in the contactees. They say that there seems to be an urgency in some of the contact now. The download programs, and I don't know if you've ever run across, and I might not be explaining it the way you understand it, but all of the contactees we met get periodic downloads of information from time to time in their heads. They just download them with information. Some of it is coherent, some of it is not coherent, some of it becomes coherent later on. But all of these things seem to be true, and we're just starting to get such a large group of contactees now that we've gone over with over the years, and now we have so many active ones working inside the organization that the information is flowing in ways it never did before, and some of it is disturbing. Some of it is actually quite exhilarating, but some of it is actually disturbing. And that just worries me. As a citizen of planet Earth, you know, it does kind of worry me. I have kids and grandkids and, well, even great-grandkids. So, you know, I want to see all of them do real well and be real happy, and I don't want to have to worry about aliens blowing up the planet, okay? It's bad enough we might blow up the planet. I don't want to see the aliens doing it. But I know I've been babbling, but let me ask you a quick question, too, while I'm thinking about this. I get to ask this all the time. If we were to get into a nuclear war as a society, say World War III, do you think extraterrestrials would intervene and stop it? What do you think, Mary?
Well, certainly a lot of the experiences tell me that we would not be allowed to go into a nuclear war, that already we know from Dr. Greer's information with the military that some of the military bunkers with the nuclear warheads have been taken out by craft picked up on radar, that even some that we sent up into space have been taken out by UFOs that have surrounded the missile head and actually taken it out and disabled it. I mean, this is all, you know, the disclosure information that Dr. Greer talks about in his lectures, that these military personnel have actually seen, you know, the craft actually taking out such serious weapons, because they say that it doesn't only affect us, it actually affects them in space and the other dimensions. So I don't think it's going to be allowed to happen, certainly if our extraterrestrial visitors have anything to do with it.
I hope so. I mean, I hope that's true. I don't know. For me, it's tough because they seem to have a wait-and-see, stand-and-look attitude. And the reason I say that is it seems to be, they haven't really helped us in our society, and they haven't really hurt us. People ask me all the time, is ET here to help us? If you go by their actions, I'd have to say no. They've been here for at least 6,000 years, probably more like 50 or 100. And they really haven't seemed to advance our society, meld our society, or even help our society as a whole. I'm not talking about the contactees, I'm talking about everybody on the planet. And if they wanted to conquer us, let's be honest, when the Sumerians ruled and you were an extraterrestrial, I think you could have conquered the planet pretty easy. And what was there, like 12 million people or 20 million people on the planet at the time? I mean, with no technology at all, so it would have been easy to conquer. So neither one of those are actually feasible explanations for why the extraterrestrials are here. So by eliminating them two, you have to stop and think, well, they've been here for a long time. They've been genetically, they've been running breeding programs, they've been in heightened abilities in humans. What exactly is it they're looking for, or what are they planning on? And why three different species working basically, not exactly, but basically along the same lines? You know, these kind of things keep me up at night. Because, you know, when I talk to contactees or even people listening to the radio show, I tell them all the time, send me your information. Tell me what you think. If you're a contactee, tell me what you think, because let's be honest, it's important. What do you think, Mary?
Well, I think you're quite right that if they wanted to take us out or they had a really negative agenda, we wouldn't be here. The mere fact that we are in itself is testament to the fact that they want to interact with us. The fact that they're altering our genetics and at the moment seem to be enhancing some of the more multidimensional abilities seems as though they really want to be involved in our evolution. And so, you know, and that's what I say to people, you know, why bother to enhance us in all these more multidimensional ways if ultimately, you know, we're going to end up as some kind of biological fodder for them? That doesn't make any sense either. My sense is, and always has been, that they probably have been doing a similar program on God knows how many different planets in the multiverses or whatever, about seeding the planet, which I think they did, and I think that they have given us a certain amount of freedom to evolve in the way that we uniquely do with the different beings that are interacting with us. And actually, I think there's more than three. My clients have seen, well, I've got about 40 on my DVD of different types of beings that people interact with, including crystalline beings and, you know, some really, you know, really unusual kinds of different beings. So I think there is quite a number of different beings actually interacting with us anyway. My sense is that they're assisting us to evolve, but there is a program of non-intervention in the sense that they want us to do some of the work ourselves. And this is what the experiences say, the you know, that part of it is their, you know, their journey to actually work and understand and grow through their own abilities rather than rely on someone coming and fixing it for them. And I think that's the bottom line, is that we are meant to work through this ourselves. We are meant to find our own solutions as much as possible. Although when we can get too dangerous, like, you know, the loaded gun of the nuclear warhead, for example, that is something that obviously is a no-no, because it, as they have told the experiences, you know, it's not just you that's affected now, you're affecting us in, you know, in space, and we can't allow you off that planet until you know what you're doing. So I think they're giving us a rapid educational acceleration of our evolution. We are actually more aware of what we're doing, so that when we do go into space properly, we can be responsible adult an adult species, if you like, rather than at the moment like the three-year-old that seems to have the loaded gun and doesn't know quite what to do with it.
That was very well said. On that note, though, ladies and gentlemen, we got to go run the break, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beach? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air, would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and Earthshare.
What America needs is affordable health insurance.
Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I've found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down, 877-679-7794. That's 877-679-7794. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds, those of us who run small businesses or don't get health insurance where we work, to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-679-7794. Not available in all states. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
What's happening? I'll tell you what. Kent Emmons here. How'd you like to spend a weekend in Branson for only $99? That's right. You and your family can now relax in Branson for only $99 or take the honey for a quick romantic getaway any weekend you choose. This amazing vacation offer includes 3 days, 2 nights in a great hotel, breakfast every morning of your stay, preferred show tickets, and hundreds of dollars in coupon savings all around town. You know, Branson, Missouri's got amusement parks, world-class golfing, beautiful lakes, endless shopping, and more live shows than Vegas. So give us a call now at 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99. It's our way of saying thanks for checking out our beautiful new resort, the Grand Crown. Here's that number again, 1-866-338-1410. Toll free, 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99.
SRN.
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Mantalda, and we're sitting and speaking with Mary Rodwell, and we will start taking some more questions here in a couple of seconds. You know, Mary, all of this stuff just intrigues me, and, well, you know, people ask me all the time, is this a hobby? I said, well, a hobby, you don't spend 80 hours of your work week and $40,000 of your own money every year on a hobby. Let's be honest. You know, I mean, if you do, I'd like to know what the hobby is. But for us, for me, it's a search for truth, for knowledge, for understanding. But I'm more curious to alien agendas. And I hate to put you on the spot, but I wanted to ask you as a researcher and talking to different abductees, contactees, and experiencers and the like, have any of them expressed what they feel may or may not be, you know, one of the different types of extraterrestrial agendas?
Well, they all have different ideas. I mean, but you know, obviously we don't know how much they've been influenced through their contact to actually give us what we want to hear or not want to hear. But the one thing I found, and you've even said it yourself, Joe, that these people generally are some of the most aware people on the planet. They're very, very genuine, likable people who seem to have a greater sense of who and what we are. And I'm very blessed with knowing so many wonderful people through my work. So if that's the influence of, you know, contact, if you like, then bring more of it onto the planet, because as far as I'm concerned, these are beautiful people that really want to change things and to look at, you know, our world and life as precious and sacred, which it seems to be the message that they're getting. If this is what, you know, the upgrade's about, then I think that that's very, very positive. The other thing, though, I think that it all suggests to me, and I look at patterns because I don't think anyone has a mandate on the truth with this. So many think they understand what the alien agendas, as they're so called, are. I don't think any of us can make a mandate on that at all. As dear old Einstein says, that those that think they have the mandate on truth and knowledge are shipwrecked by the laughter of the gods. And I would be the last to say that I think I know, but I think certainly
what I'm perceiving. And I mean, let's face it, you know about a fruit, a tree by the fruit that it bears. The fruit is very positive with most of these beautiful individuals that come with their experiences and the way that they're talking about, you know, a better way to live. What they're saying is that they think there's got to be a shift of consciousness. And what I think we're seeing is exactly that, that people are becoming more aware. And this is right across the board. The children that are being born, as Dr. Roger Lear talked about, are now accelerated in developmental stages up to 40 to 80%, he was noticing, in America in the last 40 years. So we are seeing a change. We're seeing a shift of consciousness. And they are talking about that. Many of them believe it's a shift of consciousness. A shift of awareness is the agenda to get us to be more multidimensionally aware. And it even fits in with the Mayan calendar of 2012, where, you know, that we've got what they call the end of time or time. It's not about us being extinct or being exterminated. It's more about us being more multidimensional, where time is not what we believe it is, that we will actually be beyond that in some way, that time, in fact, they're told, is linear. That maybe as multidimensional beings, time will not be as we understand it, and that's why the Mayan calendar is how it is or ends at that particular time. Who knows? But that's just one of my theories.
Well, no, it's a good one. And, you know, we tell people all the time when they ask us about the agenda, I said, we have opinions, we have thoughts, we have ideas, we even have some hypotheses. I said, but remember, take them for what they are. I said, none of us know for sure. We are speculating when we're talking about agendas. We may or may not be right. We can only go on the information given to us by the contactees. And, you know, that when you do enough of them, it seems to point in particular directions. But even then, and I hate to say this, but E.T. lies. Ladies and gentlemen, I hate to be the one to break y'all's little hearts, but they do lie because by talking to contactees and lots of them, you do realize that every once in a while they tell them something for their own good or not for their own good or for someone else's benefit, but they do lie. So that was kind of an enlightening but disappointing discovery when we made that. I was kind of like, well, you know, they lie. I would think higher beings wouldn't lie, but apparently maybe they don't consider it that. Okay, but that's what it is for humans. It's a lie. Also, ladies and gentlemen, the virtual auditorium is maxed out, so all I can tell you is listen to us radio side until the seat opens up and you can come on in. But as of about 15 minutes ago, it's been maxed. So you can catch us on the radio side. You know where to find us. And if not, you can hang out and wait for a seat to open up. But, you know, Mary, it's just strange that all of this seems to point into a direction, but then seems to just kind of be free-flowing as well. You start seeing patterns and directions with all contactees as you do the research over the years. But then sometimes, well, I shouldn't say sometimes, a lot of the times you'll get, I don't want to call them conflicting reports, but they seem to be running in a different area than, say, you've been talking to this 50 contactees and they say, okay, ET's doing this, this, and this, and this, and they seem to be moving in this direction. And all of a sudden you'll have like 15 or 20 of them coming in and say, well, they're doing this, this, and this, and it's the same race, and you're kind of going, well, wait, are they two? I mean, we already know there's multiple agendas, but these are like opposing sides, and you kind of wonder what's going on here. And I'm not even sure what that is, but I know, you know, when we only done 100 or 200 contactees, we made a lot of, we came up with a lot of hypotheses, or I should say a lot of theories that were actually very wrong. And here we are at 7,000 later, probably more like 9,000 now with the support groups and all. And still, I wouldn't be willing to say 100% what I thought an alien agenda was. I would tell y'all that I think some of them will benefit man, and I think some of them will not benefit some men, and some of them are strictly for the extraterrestrials' use and has nothing to do with us other than the fact that they need something we have or they want us to do something, but it doesn't really seem to matter to them any other way, and you really got to get into nitty-gritty and what contactees are what and what races are doing what, but it does seem there are patterns and there are things that you can recognize, and now, you know, with having abduction criteria, when we meet someone who says they're a contactee, usually in the first 25 words, if they haven't keyed off in at least 5 or 6 keywords, you can pretty much bet they're not a contactee. Now, let me ask you this, John, I'm babbling again, but what's your thoughts on using hypnosis on abductees and contactees?
I think it's a very, very valuable tool, and contrary to a lot of misconceptions that often in hypnosis people will confabulate or fantasize or whatever. That's not been my experience in the many individuals that I've regressed. What I've found is if you try and mislead them, they'll actually correct you. If you say something, you know, like, you know, what color's their hair, they'll say there isn't any hair. So you can't actually lead them on, and I certainly found that. And I found also that they have access to a lot more information if you give them, you know, you ask them the right questions. So I found it quite invaluable. And Dr. John Mack himself, who I think has been an absolute amazing and wonderful figure to help those working in the therapeutic professions with this, he said that he believes in hypnosis the subconscious is less is actually more likely to tell the truth than when you're actually trying to get information from a conscious perspective, because the subconscious doesn't edit out the things that the conscious mind would reject. So in other words, it's more likely you're getting the real truth of what's going on through that that particular method than if in fact you're talking to them consciously, where they may edit out literally things that may not fit with their present belief system, if you like. So in fact you're more likely to get more to the truth of the experience, if anything, which is completely opposite to what a lot of people actually believe.
Well, no, I actually agree with that statement, and most of the stuff I've read on it does seem to push along the lines that you probably wouldn't lie. Your subconscious is probably less likely to lie than your conscious mind is. But it does, you know, it can be led, and things can be changed, and things can be confabulated, so you got to be careful. But for us, we use it. I mean, I think it's a great tool myself, but we have very strict guidelines when it comes to regression therapy. And we will try to use everything else first before we use it. But that's not so much because of the regression therapy. It's just in the States, it's not considered to be very credible. People will give you a very hard time about using it. So really for us, we try to use it as a last resort. We try a multitude of other things, including counseling, to try to get people to open up on their own and recover these memories on their own. And in most cases, well, not most, but 80% of the cases, once they hit, they'll actually keyword on off. In other words, you know, you may have an abductee in the group speaking, or one of the hosts may be speaking or something like that, and a person will hear something that triggers a memory. Usually once we can get that primary memory triggered, the rest seems to fall in place on its own, but still, there's that 20% that you know something happened to, but for some reason you can't retrieve it. Sometimes it's because it's bad and scary stuff. Sometimes it's just because the person don't want to accept the fact that they're an abductee or a contactee. And I tell everybody, and I don't know if this is true for you or not, but I tell everybody, do not get yourself regressed unless you're ready for the truth. Because, you know, a lot of people come up and say, well, Joe, I think I might have had experience, but and I want to be regressed. Well, I said, are you ready to know you've been contacted by an alien or what you may or may not see in this regression? Because, you know, some of this is traumatic. And for a person to go in this with blinders on is just asking for trouble. But how does that work for you?
I agree absolutely, Joe, that people have to be aware that life as they know it will be completely altered once they actually go into any experience on that deep level, because it changes everything that they've ever believed about themselves. I usually say it's like you finding that there's another you that's lived in Russia and you've got three kids. How would you feel about that if you realize that was another aspect of yourself? Because it's as life-changing as that. So they have to be fully aware of, you know, the importance of actually doing this and what it may mean for them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I can understand. I like that analogy about the Russian thing, too. That was just kind of funny. I don't know. It's tough. I'll tell you what, that's great. I know we're getting short on time here. Ooh, man, we're down to 13 minutes, huh? Boy, Mary, you just making the time fly. I see we got Therese from Mass up. Therese, you ready to ask Mary a question? Why don't you come up and you're on the air live with Mary Rockwell.
Wonderful program, Therese again. Ms. Rodwell, in addition to the reported telepathic influence, do you think that actual physical genetic manipulation by aliens or contactees could present bioethical issues, such as the informed consent of the contactee to such alien interaction? And what would your research indicate as well on this aspect? Thanks for your response.
It's an interesting one because of the way that we actually understand the interactions. But for many of the experiences, they actually look at it actually quite differently to the way that we understand this is a bioethical decision. To give you an example, let me quote one experiencer that said, at the beginning, I misunderstood the Greys. The knowing ET part of me initially made a decision to assist them, and the understanding of this can be overshadowed by fear, which stems from our limited human perceptions and reactions to these experiences. So what she was actually saying was that she was aware that on some level she'd actually consented to this experience. And, you know, although some people may struggle with this, there seems to be an inner awareness with many experiences that say, because I will ask that question, have you on any level consented to this experience? And without question, they've all actually said yes. Some of them believe that it, for them, it's a, almost a pre-birth kind of decision to interact with them. And it's and they say there's a trade going on, a trade between them having their abilities enhanced for the fact of you know, allowing them to use certain genetic material for, you know, the evolution of the species. So you have to honor the person's understanding because it's their journey and how they choose to understand it, whether as a researcher or not, or someone looking at it from an ethical point of view. That's how the person usually chooses to understand it when they are asked those kinds of questions.
That was very good. I hope that answered your question, Patricia. It was very interesting to me. You know, when I'm talking to you, I'm listening to you speak, and I mean, I've probably got another, I don't know, 200-300 questions for you. And actually, there's quite a few things I would like to get into, such as some of the more details of the abduction, some of the things the contactees are getting into and how they're dealing with it. But I know we're down to about 10 minutes, and we're not going to even open none of those topics up because we ain't going to have time to discuss them. But you know, it's interesting how it brings certain people together. And I don't know how, if you've experienced this or not, but for us, we have seen just groups of people who have come together, banded together. Actually, a lot of them even have started to take a keen interest in this particular field. And it's weird because it doesn't seem like where they are on the planet. And when I say groups, I don't mean like, you know, a bunch of Americans get together, it seems like that, you know, you may have some people in the same communities in the same countries that hook up, and then they'll be talking to people over the internet or through other ways, and the groups just kind of form together. And over the last few years, we've seen about 7 or 8 of these groups that have formed. They're usually 100 to 150 people, contactees in each group, and they seem to have just a unique pull to each other, and they seem to be very, very in tune with each other. When you put them on a project or get them involved with stuff, they seem to do a very good job on it, and they seem to accelerate very well. And don't get me wrong, I mean, it's like anything else in life, there's always problems, but they just seem to handle it real well. And I was very fortunate when it came to the Family Divide car and when we started working with Wake Up USA and with the UFO Alien Phenomena group that we stumbled across a couple of these groups, and I got to tell you, they do a lot of research for us. They do a lot of work for us. And by the way, let me make this offer now, Mary. If you ever come across something that you really want to have researched on a heavy basis and you just don't have the time, get in touch with me. We actually have an outstanding research team, and they are very thorough. They will look and look and search every source they can possibly find to get the information to confirm or to deny something or to help you to figure out something. They're very good at what they do. And they really make me look good because they work really, really hard. And, you know, I was like everybody else when I got involved with this for the first 18 years, or I should say for about the first 15 years I was involved in this. This was pretty much a solo venture. You know, I was, you know, doing this by myself and working it by myself. But I've been very fortunate in the last 7 years that I've myself and some others have put together a really good team and a very large group of people that seem to have a unique common interest. So it works out really well. I just wanted to offer that to you. Most of the people who work in the abduction field, I'll make that offer to, because I do understand what they're doing and what they got to go through and the amount of work this actually takes. You know, somebody asked me the other day, boy, you must make a lot of money off of this. And I just had to laugh at them. I just had to. I was like, dude, what? I said, man, I'm hoping they're going to let me write this off on my taxes. What are you talking about? And I tell people all the time, and I don't know if it's true in Australia, but I know in the States it is. If you're getting into ufology for money, you're getting into the wrong field. you need to go somewhere else because you're not going to make, you might get lucky and make some, but the only people I know that actually make a living at this is like Stanton Friedman and Dr. Greer. Otherwise than that, I don't know anybody else that actually makes a living doing this. The most of us are out there putting in our own time, our own money, and it's nice to see people like you and other people who might get out a book or some documents and actually recoup some of this money they've been spending. But it is. You ever notice that this is an expensive field to be in?
Look, I laugh like you have just done when they say that, you know, to get into ufology and to make money. As you say, I don't know anyone who makes money out of this. Most of us spend our own time and effort, even going to conferences. All of that, you know, is our own resources to be more informed. I mean, I wrote a book, and to be quite honest, I never expected to make any money out of it, and it's quite true that you don't. You know, you write and you do this because it's important and because, you know, ultimately you want to do something to make a difference to the planet or at least to help. But in terms of making money, I mean, I find the whole thing quite incredible. They could even imagine that you do. You may recoup a little bit for your telephone bill occasionally, but when it comes to anything else, the only reason you do this, as you know, Joe, is because you're passionate, because you care, and you want to make a difference. But if anyone makes money out of it, I'd like to hear from them because I'm obviously doing something wrong.
I know, that's what I tell them all the time. I'm like, look, what's the secret? I said, I actually got, you know, a very successful construction company and a nice little computer business, and I'm thinking, I'm a pretty good businessman. I can't make any money at this. I'm like, I don't think people understand, you know, to do the amount of research we do and to travel and meet the people. It's not free. You know, it's like the Laughlin Conference we're fixing to, I mean, not the Laughlin Conference, I apologize for that, Ryan, to the Crash Retrieval Conference in Vegas. You know, we'll spend $2,000, $3,000, maybe $4,000 unless, you know, in case we go to a casino, we'll add an extra grand in there. But still, that's out of my pocket. There's nobody funding that but me, you know. And we're going to go up and have a good time, and we're going to interview everybody, and we're going to come back and talk about it on the radio show, and we're going to let everybody know what's going on because we want people to get the truth. And, you know, somebody asked me, how do we choose our guests? Well, if they work in the field, we want them on the show. Now, granted, we don't always agree with everything that everybody comes on the show, and even some of the researches I personally really like, I don't always agree with. But we have learned a long time ago to agree to disagree, and I'm glad to see ufology starting to learn this lesson. You know, we all know ET's visiting the planet. We all know they're abducting people. Whether or not we actually agree on what's happening in the abductions or what the long-term agenda is really doesn't matter at this point. The simple fact is, as a society and a group, if we present ourselves united that, yes, we know ET is here, then, yes, many more people are going to take us serious. But with the amount of infighting they have these days over this one said that and that one did this and this one believes that, that's crazy. You know, we're all researchers. It's all theories and hypotheses, and we're all working on the same things. So we may agree or we may not, but we do all agree ET's on the planet. And that is important to present that as a united front. But for some reason, like I said, it is getting better. At least in the United States, it's getting better. I see less and less infighting. And there's a lot of new ufologists on the rise. And the thing of it is, and, you know, it's something we coined a long time ago, agreed to disagree. And it is starting to take hold now. So that was nice to see happen. That was truly a nice thing to see because, you know what, we don't need anything political inside the ufology community. There's enough of that going on outside. You know, and we're all looking for the same things, and we all agree that there ain't no money in this, so there's no reason to be fighting about it. I don't know. I guess it takes a certain amount of ego to get up here and do this, and maybe that's the wrong word for it, but for most of us, you know, you got to be fairly confident in who and what you are, and you have to be decently intelligent to get up and speak on the radio or speak at conferences or give lectures, and you know, so I guess maybe every now and then personalities just rub each other the wrong way. But I don't know. Everybody I've met, I've liked. I mean, I may necessarily not agree with them, but I didn't find anything wrong with them as a person. So I don't know. I don't know. Do y'all have that problem in Australia? Y'all might not have that problem because y'all are more open society down there.
Oh, look, it's when personalities get in the, and egos get in the way of actually putting the information out there and realizing that we're all actually on the same page. When I was actually in Hawaii a few months ago speaking at the Exopolitics ET World Peace Fair, one of the first things I said is we've got to have peace in ufology, and also to realize that we've all got parts of the ET elephant, as I call it, that story of the seven blind men all having one piece of the elephant, and describing the elephant as if they've got the tail like the tail, or if they've got the foot like the foot. But ultimately, none of them, because they're all blind, can actually see the whole elephant. And I said it's the same thing for, you know, our understanding of this. We've all got bits of the elephant. If we keep trying to tell everybody else they're not right, we're never, ever going to see the whole elephant. So it is important we get beyond personal egos and we realize we all should be on the same page, even if we don't necessarily always agree with our understanding of what we're finding. At least it's other parts of the picture that we need to look at. And then respect, for, you know, call being adult and being mature and getting over, you know, personalities and realizing that united we will get people to listen, but if we're divided amongst ourselves, nobody's going to listen to any of it.
I agree wholeheartedly on that. So, all right, we're getting almost out of time. Mary, tell them where they can find you at. Tell them where they can find all the goodies at so they know where to get you. We've got to make sure we get that in here before we go.
Well, if you go onto my website, it's www.
Oh, did we lose her? Mary, did we lose you? Oh, that was weird. We lost her. That was strange. That was dang strange there. I don't know. Well, y'all know where to find her at. It's www.maryrodwell.com. I'm sure that there'll be links there to bring you to everything you need to get to and to find all the different information that you'll need about her. So on that note, guys, we're just about out of time. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Also, next week is Greg Jackix. Should be an interesting show. A lot of good stuff going on, guys. A lot of busy stuff going on. You know, it ought to be a lot of fun. The shows are good. We enjoy it. We've been enjoying ourselves. Been a lot of good guests on lately. Been a lot of things to talk about. And lately, the guests we've been bringing on, we need to get back quickly because, like tonight, I mean, we barely touched on anything with Ms. Rodwell, so... hope to have her back on soon, maybe not that soon. I don't think we have an open date till December. I'll have to check with Linda. But anyway, guys and girls, I want to tell everyone thanks for tuning in to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. And pretty much, guys, on that note, we're out of here, so have a good evening.
If you would like to continue this discussion after the show, join us in iCar's Pal Talk chat room, UFO Alien Phenomenon, under the Social Issues category.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but you don't want to sit around on your butt all day. You're on the move, and you need your music. This station is linked with a mobile broadcast network, which makes it possible for you to hear your favorite internet broadcasts live on your cell phone, anytime, anywhere. Get connected. Go to www.mymbn.com. The mobile broadcast network is brought to you exclusively by Access Voice.
Is life moving too fast? If you're self-employed or a small business owner, you have no choice but to move as fast as you can. Sometimes you move so fast you don't take a close look at life's details. When was the last time you looked at your health insurance? If you don't have health insurance or if you have the wrong coverage, serious medical bills could mount up. That's where the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company comes in. We provide affordable health insurance for the self-employed and small business owners. If you don't have health insurance, call us. If you have coverage, call us. Anyway, see if we can give you better coverage at a better price. Stay on track for affordable health insurance designed specifically for the self-employed and small business owners.
Call 877-735-6460. That's 877-735-6460. Home office located in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states and benefits may vary by state. Association membership may not be required to obtain insurance. Call 877-735-6460 for details.
SRN 1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network.
www.stardustradio.com.